Good afternoon, and thanks for joining. I am Kirsten Dobrath. I'm the news director here at KMXT, in for our usual host, Jared Griffin. And we have a very exciting episode today. Joining me for this afternoon's Talk of the Rock is Nate Svoboda. He's the area management biologist for Alaska's Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak. And Bill Dunker, he's the assistant area management biologist for Alaska Department of Fish and Game, also here in Kodiak. And we are going to talk about a very special topic for many people here, bears. One of my favorite topics. I know I'm not the only one. So I think it's always interesting, and seeing as it's January, it's important to point out that many of the bears right now are hibernating, but many are not. So for people who are wondering what is going on with Kodiak's bears right now, what can you tell us about their behavior at this time of year?
Well, as you point out, Kirsten, many of the bears...
Sorry, don't have you on. Okay, we're all good to go.
Yeah, you got me. There you go. Yeah, as you point out, Kristen, many of the bears are hibernating right now, as they typically do this time of year. However, as always on Kodiak, there are a number of bears that are out and about on the landscape, and that'll be the case throughout the winter. It's not the majority of bears by all means, but it is sometimes quite a few, and we do have some recent reports of tracks. For example, the other day there was a bear up and down on the Buskin, and there was one over on the U.S. Coast Guard base. So they do come out and about in the wintertime from time to time, so people might see them. And as we always tell folks, you know, on Kodiak, you need to be bear aware pretty much year-round. Whether it's summer, spring, or winter, there will be some bears out and about.
And do you get calls about, I mean, it sounds like you've had a few sightings of tracks and people have seen them. Do you get a lot of calls at this time of year, or is it not as, obviously not as common as it would be in, say, like the fall or summer?
Yeah, we certainly receive phone calls either directly from the public or reports that we receive from other entities here in Kodiak. It's certainly slower this time of year, and things will definitely ramp up once the majority of bears emerge from their dens and go about their usual activities in the summer months. But, yeah, we definitely receive reports at any given point in the year.
So for the bears that do not hibernate, what do they do right now? And they don't have, like, normal behavior. I think you and I have talked about this before, Nate, that they their metabolism's moving slower, they're moving a little bit slower.
Exactly.
Compared to people who have maybe seen them in the summer or in the fall when they're foraging, what might they look like right now?
And that's a pretty important distinction, too, with regard to their slow metabolism. You know, a lot of people, particularly if they have bear encounters in the winter months, you know, they might do something that they would normally do in the summer, like trying to scare the bear off or making noise or something like that, and they report that, oh, it's just not responding like it normally would. The bear doesn't care that I'm here, which might not necessarily be the case. You know, as you point out, they have much lower metabolism. They move a lot slower. They respond a lot slower. So if you're dealing with a bear encounter in the wintertime and you do some of the same kind of deterrent activities that we encourage folks to do in the summer, you might get a slightly different response. You know, those bears might not respond as quickly as they would in the summer, and that's because their metabolism has slowed down. But the bears that are out and about, you know, they're doing what bears do. They're looking for food and anything that they can munch on this time of year. You know, a lot of times, since there's not a lot of natural food sources available, this is the time when it's extra important to keep those non-natural food sources tucked away and not make them available for bears. Bears also will go up and down the beaches looking for marine-derived nutrients. You know, beach hoppers, we call them, the little bugs that they forage on in the kelp. Also anything that might have washed up, dead whales, seals, sea lions, those sorts of things.
And speaking of this summer, it seemed like this year there were a lot of bear sightings around town. I know that bears are not an uncommon sight for people that live here, but how unusual was this summer and how kind of typical were the amount of bears that we were seeing even in neighborhoods? I know there were some by the high school one morning. Sure. Near Island had a few bears hanging out there.
Yeah, this summer was kind of an anomaly. We had quite a few bears coming into town. I think at one point, I think there was somewhere around 5 sows with cubs around town, which, of course, is exciting for residents, both maybe a little nervous, but also just enjoying them being around. Yeah, and I think there's a couple of reasons that we had such a increase in bear activity this summer. I mean, we did have a pretty decent fish run, but it seems like it was fleeting a little bit earlier than normal. The berries, there were berries available, but maybe not in the amounts that would have been preferred. So I think some of those just lack of natural resources or timing of natural resources and food availability kind of led to a lot of those bears coming into town.
And when you get a call, like, for instance, on Near Island, when you're hearing that there's bears, you know, on this trail system that's used by, you know, a lot of families, dog walkers, people have administrative offices over there. As from Fish and Game, how do you kind of contain that? Like, what's kind of the response that, and I know you work with other people, wildlife troopers, Kodiak Police Department, but how do you facilitate and coordinate in a call like that?
Yeah, especially during the summer months, you know, we're in constant communication with KPD and the Alaska Wildlife Troopers so that we can coordinate any response that's necessary. We'll generally handle each individual case on a case-by-case basis and try and determine collectively what the appropriate response is in that instance. A lot of times it's just sharing the information with the public so people can make good decisions about their behavior and be prepared to potentially encounter bears, perhaps in an area where they're not accustomed to seeing bears, like Near Island, for example. But we want to give people the information that they need to make good decisions.
You had brought up the sets of sows and cubs that were on the island, and I know that was something that a lot of people were following at one point this summer. Was the sow and the cub, I believe it was three cubs,
correct,
that were seen throughout town on the road system here, and they were relocated. I know there was a lot of talk about whether they would be relocated. What are kind of the challenges with relocating bears? Why isn't that a go-to all the time, and why was that something that was used in this instance?
Sure. Yeah, so we, in general, we kind of have a policy where we don't relocate animals, bears in particular, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is it's largely unsuccessful. Very rarely do you translocate bears to another part of an area and they don't make it back. And so it's usually not successful. That's why we typically don't do it. In addition to that, you know, when you pick up a group of bears or even a single bear and you take it out in the wild and you drop it in a new place, so to speak, it really kind of messes with the dynamics of the bear world, right? Bears already have their home ranges. They already have their areas where they get their resources and live. And when you take and dump bears in the middle of that kind of established hierarchy, it kind of throws things in off balance a little bit. But that combined with the fact that largely they're unsuccessful, that's why we usually don't do it. This situation was pretty unique in the fact that, you know, we had a group of bears in town. They were largely not causing trouble. I mean, for a large significant portion of their time in town, they were eating natural foods. They weren't causing many headaches. The community largely enjoyed seeing them around. They weren't really getting into trouble, so to speak. But they didn't reach that threshold where we would have to dispatch them. You know, they weren't being threatening. They weren't breaking into chicken coops or houses. So they'd never really reached that threshold that we would have had to dispatch them or you know, get rid of them. In addition to that, or aside from that, they were getting too close to people. And not only that, but people were getting too close to the bears. It was just becoming a unwieldy situation where people were getting too comfortable around them. And then in a very short period of time, they rapidly escalated their use of trash. So once the sow successfully got into a dumpster, the cubs followed suit, and next thing you know, they're almost entirely eating trash. And for those reasons, and because they never reached the threshold to dispatch them, we talked to our supervisors, and we had all the resources lined up where we were able to try a translocation. And so we got approval to do it, and we gave it a shot. So we were luckily with great support from the wildlife troopers, KPD, and actually a number of Kodiak residents, we were able to successfully capture all four and relocate them to another area of the island.
So how do you capture four bears? How does this work, and how do you transport them? I'll let Nate is pointing to Bill, so I'll let you take that one.
Well, like Nate pointed out, you know, it was a collaborative effort among a lot of different people just to locate the animals. So for starters, we were getting reports of, you know, locations during the course of the day that those captures took place. Once we located the animals, then we were able to use drugs in effect to chemically immobilize the animals, and then we're able to safely handle them and transport them and move them about. So we use a dart projector to shoot a hypodermic needle syringe of sorts that we can use to inject drugs into the animal. It'll make it fall asleep in a condition where we can safely handle it.
And I hate to ask, but do we have an update on the sow and cubs on their what has happened to them since they were relocated?
We do. So, yeah, we were able to, through the immobilization process, we were able to successfully put a GPS tracking collar on one of the cubs, and then we put another VHF collar on the sow. And so two out of the four we were able to put collars on, so we were able to track them. And unfortunately, as we kind of surmised and expected from the start, after about 28 days, the cub made it back into town. And shortly thereafter, the sow made it back into town. And interestingly enough, they were first observed at the very same dumpster that we originally ran them off of. So they have an incredible memory and knack for getting back to where you removed them from. And unfortunately, once that occurred, we had no choice but to dispatch them.
And how has the, I know we've talked about this in the past as well, trash, you know, some things it's, you know, if they're going to bang into a dumpster and get into it, there's not much you can stop this enormous bear from trying. But has there been improvements in people, you know, disposing of trash, not leaving out attractants? How has that been, particularly given the bear activity in town this summer?
Sure. Well, first, I think it's important to recognize that the residents of Kodiak are, by and large, tremendous. They do a fantastic job of overall of taking care of their trash and being respectful of bears and being bearware, if you will. Of course, there's always some folks who didn't get the memo or just don't think certain things are an issue. But by and large, people are getting much better. You know, we do have a constant messaging where we work a lot of times with KMXT to get message out, public service announcements, you know, reminding people during certain times of the year to put your attractants away. And, you know, this is bears are starting to come out, so let's put some things away. So it's been, you know, it's a community effort. And I think by and large, it's getting a lot better. And we do have programs like we were discussing prior to the show. For example, at the high school, we have a program with the high school welding and art students where we work with Highmark Marine and Alaska Waste and some other supporting entities where we bring dumpsters up to the high school. The welding students will retrofit them to make them bear resistant, and then they wheel them down the hall to the high school or to the art students, and they beautify them with bearware messaging, and then they're put back out in our community. And I'm sure a lot of people have seen them around. This year, we're kind of taking it up another level. We have great support from Highmark Marine, for example. They're giving us some of their resources, and we're going to ramp it up a little bit and try to get a bunch more dumpsters done. So there's little steps like that in addition to public education that I think have really made a profound effect on how we deal with bears.
And before we started, Bill, we were also talking about some of the programs, speaking of school programs, that you've been involved in some programs as far as outreach to kids at the high school for bear education programs. Can you talk a little bit? What does that look like?
Sure. So that program is really, I'd say, being spearheaded by the folks with the Kodiak Brown Bear Trust to just kind of facilitate and generate some appreciation for Kodiak bears and the unique resource that they are among high school students that may or may not be, you know, familiar with bears, including, you know, their biology and behavior. Last year was the first year, and I was able to participate in that. And it's underway again with a little bit bigger scope in terms of the topics that we'll be covering. But ultimately, the program itself culminated with an opportunity for a lot of the students or a number of the students to actually participate in a bear viewing trip. And spearheaded by the Brown Bear Trust, and it turned out to be an excellent program that the kids seemed to really appreciate, and I look forward to participating in it again this year.
Speaking of learning more about them, I think it's so interesting. There's so many facets of Kodiak brown bears that it seems like you could jump off and talk about all these fun trivia facts about them, their size. But one thing I've read about that I wanted to ask you is in terms of their intelligence. I have heard that brown bears are somewhere between a chimpanzee and a dog in terms of their intelligence. That's pretty remarkable if that's true, if I'm getting that right.
Yeah, that's real difficult to put your finger on exactly with regard to comparison, but suffice it to say that, yeah, they're incredibly intelligent. You know, they learn very quickly about their surroundings. They can adapt very quickly to their surroundings, and they do have an incredible ability to move across the landscape and remember where they came from, remember where certain resources are, and take advantage of that. So, yeah, those comparisons I'm not super comfortable with, but, they're very intelligent beings, and they shouldn't be underestimated.
It might have been an outdated biology book that I read that in, but it stuck with me regardless.
Sure.
So glad we can set the record straight on that. I was also going to ask you, going back to the trash thing, I did want to bring up one thing I had covered last year, and you, Nate, you and I had spoken about, was there had been a bear that had to be put down last year that when a necropsy was performed on it, it was discovered that this ball of trash that had been ingested created a blockage that starved the bear. Yeah. I know that was a really difficult thing to, have to put a bear down for that reason. We just talked about trash and some of the outreach efforts to, how good Kodiak residents typically are about not leaving out attractants, public education efforts. Have there been any more instances that you know of either one of you that happening to another bear in Kodiak, or has that been an isolated incident?
To the best of our knowledge, that's somewhat of an isolated incident, at least that we're aware of, and that was, as you point out, a really unfortunate situation. That was a female bear who actually had young. She was lactating, and to have to remove her from the population because of human-induced impacts was, very frustrating and disheartening. But, that was the only instance that we've been aware of where that has specifically occurred. That being said, I would almost guarantee that's not the only time that's occurred. It's not uncommon for us to go for a walk in the woods, particularly around town, and find bear scat that is just laden with trash and plastic bags and, just various things that bears pick up from the dumpster. So although that seemed to be kind of an isolated case, I would doubt highly that that's the only time that has occurred.
Okay. I also, speaking of things that newsworthy items to talk about with bears, I also wanted to bring up bird flu. Kodiak had the bear cub, I believe, down by Passag Shack that died of bird flu. Was that an instance of a dead bear that was found? Was it observed acting funny? What happened with that?
That particular cub, which, by the way, was the first instance of bird flu discovered in a brown bear in the world. Recently there was one in Montana as well, but the one on Kodiak was actually the first one of a brown bear getting HPAI in the world, actually. So... but that particular bear, that was found by a hunter, found dead down in Passag Shack. It was in fairly decent shape, newly dead, if you will. And we brought that back and sent that up for a necropsy in Anchorage. And, we didn't really anticipate any particular result. We had no idea that it had bird flu when we sent it up. There was no clear sign of death, right? There was no bullet wounds. There wasn't obvious signs that another bear killed it, and so it was really a question. So we sent that up to Anchorage to do a necropsy, and lo and behold, got the test back, and it was avian influenza.
So what happens from there? How much coordination goes on with other area management biologists in the state when you discover something like that? And since then, has there been any other instances of bird flu being found in bears in Alaska?
I'm not really sure about any other bears in Alaska, not that I'm aware of, but our disease veterinarian probably should have a much better idea on that. But there is quite a bit of collaboration when something like that occurs, particularly since that was the first brown bear in the world. It goes out to, you know, it gets distributed worldwide I can't remember what the entity is that distributes that information, but it does require a lot of collaboration and coordination with the state veterinarian, other disease vets across North America, and particularly Alaska. So basically it just raises the awareness, you know, and presumably and most likely bird flu was brought to Kodiak by some type of waterfowl. And so we don't know how prevalent it is in the population. This is the first one that's been discovered in Kodiak, but there could certainly be more. We just don't know how prevalent it is at this point.
So going forward, are there's certain things that, you know, we've talked about that the likelihood of seeing a bear right now probably isn't super high, but people can see them. Is there certain behavior or things people should be looking for if they do see a bear that they should be, or other type of wildlife that they should be letting Fish and Game know about when it comes to bird flu?
Yeah, absolutely. So just an animal acting abnormal. You know, one of the common references that we hear from a lot of folks who have seen animals impacted by avian influenza is they say they appear, quote, drunk. So, you know, if an animal's not walking, if they are not walking appropriately, or they have off, you know, lost their balance or something like that, those are usually signs that something is wrong. And in particular, it could be one of the impacts of bird flu. So if folks notice that, it's most certainly important to report that to us. What's also helpful is getting an exact location, so a GPS point, if you will, or a point on a map. And then it's important that folks don't touch them. You know, we haven't had any instances. Actually, I take that back. There's been one instance in the U.S. where bird flu has been transferred to a human. But other than that, it's incredibly, incredibly rare. But we still encourage people just don't touch them. Let us do that. We have the ability and the resources to do that. But a GPS location, photos, and then anything else that you think is relevant. How is the animal acting? Was there any other, you know, extenuating circumstances that might play into that behavior? And then report that to us so we can go out and investigate it appropriately.
So kind of looking ahead, too, it is the end of January. I was very surprised looking at my calendar to see that tomorrow's February. So we're still, you know, in the dead of winter. But in the next few months, I'm assuming we'll start to see more bear tracks and bears will be starting to wake up. What does that look like? When can we start to see bears probably more often? And what is the process like for them to come out of hibernation?
Well, it's, you know, they come out at different times of year. So depending on, you know, their status, if you will, whether it's a male, whether it's a lone female, whether it's a female with cubs, female with yearlings, et cetera, they'll come out at different times. But that'll start to occur, you know, April, May-ish, we'll start to see bears. You know, keep in mind that bears are out and about right now to much smaller numbers. But as they begin to come out, you know, you'll see them. And for those who are in the high elevations and flying around, you might see them poke their heads out of dens. They might mill around for the den for a little bit. Cubs will stay in the den a little bit longer as they, you know, become more confident and start to venture a little bit further from the den. And that all should be happening here in a couple months. You know, end of January, early February is when they have their cubs, the new cubs in the den. So right now a lot of cubs are being born in the dens. They won't be coming out for a couple months, but, it won't be long before you'll see quite a few bears back on the landscape.
And, of course, we have you here, I know a lot of us who hike or walk our dogs or just go out into our driveway could run into bears. Any general takeaways, reminders for people as we get into that season for bear awareness?
Yeah, I mean, regular messaging, you know, don't run. That's the big thing. You know, make yourself known. Travel in groups, these sorts of things. Be aware of your surroundings. You know, be thinking about where is a bear likely to be and why. You know, for example, if you're going hiking on a stream and the fish are starting to come in, you know, that's a pretty good likelihood that you might have a bear there. Early in the spring, bears are typically eating spring green up shoots. You know, they might be digging for roots. So just think about when you're out and about, you know, is this a good spot for a bear to be? And if so, maybe I should start doing, you know, making noise or making myself more aware.
We have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask both of you Bill, you've talked a little bit about getting into the school with kids and, you know, outreach programs for bear education. And I'm interested, for people who, both of you who are wildlife management biologists who study bears and other species on Kodiak, and Bill, you just came here from Nome, so have experience studying other species in Alaska. How did you get into this niche? And for kids that are listening, which hopefully they're in school, I would think, right now, but if they are listening and they have an interest in wildlife and animals, how would you suggest that they take that to the next level of getting into a career in that next step?
Well, hopefully they're still in school, and so stay in school would be a good step in the right direction. But my background, I mean, I always had an affinity for the outdoors and hunting and trapping and fishing as a kid. So it was a natural progression for me to pursue that as a career. I have a background in wildlife science that I went to college for. And then kind of got my foot in the door with the department and was able to just gain a wealth of experience over the years working for Fish and Game. But that introduction, you know, there's a lot of volunteer work that was involved just to get more experience than a number of, you know, seasonal jobs and things like that, and research opportunities that I was able to participate in that, you know, ultimately provided the experience necessary to do the work that I do today.
So I have to ask you, too, since this has been kind of a bear-specific episode, we jumped on this episode on air, we were talking that you've been in Nome for the last 10 years. You're in Kodiak now, obviously. The first time, and I'm, you know, I don't know if you've been to Kodiak before that, but the first time you remember seeing a Kodiak bear, what is that like? I mean, I think for a lot of people, we see them maybe in the distance, we get used to them, but for someone who's newer to the area, I know I've only been here for a year. What were your first thoughts seeing a Kodiak bear?
I'm trying to remember the first Kodiak bear is probably, I did actually work for the Fish and Wildlife Service here many years ago.
But, okay.
So my first observation of a Kodiak bear was probably down in Karlik Lake, and you know, it was maybe not memorable now that I try and think about it, but certainly.
Putting me on the spot.
Yeah, an amazing sight to be seen. We got a chance to observe those animals in their natural habitat and doing what bears do, and I think that's something that I certainly appreciate, and I know other people do as well.
And we have about 30 seconds, Nate, left, Nate, so I'll let you, that same question to you, kind of both first time if you remember seeing a bear, and then also any advice to kids who want to continue following their passion for wildlife.
Sure, yeah. excuse me, I was pretty astonished the first Kodiak brown bear I saw. I had considerable amount of work prior to this working on black bears in the Great Lakes region, and then coming up to Alaska and Kodiak in particular and seeing the first Kodiak bear, I was just awestruck, to be honest with you. They're pretty amazing animals, as most of us know. With regard to the kids, I think Bill provided some great advice. You know, all I could add on to that was, you know, get involved. You know, there's lots of programs out there even for young kids. You know, I know the refuge has stuff that they do in the summer, as does other entities around the island. Get the kids involved, you know, make sure that's something they are truly passionate about, and you know, it'll help kind of mold them into hopefully being future wildlife biologists.
Well, Nate Svoboda and Bill Dunker with Alaska's Department of Fish and Game here in Kodiak, thank you so much for talking bears and joining me on this today's episode of Talk of the Rock.
Yeah, thank you, Kirsten. Appreciate
it.